Chapter 14. Iron from Within. Metatron. Termination complete. War Anvil was firing blind. Every gun was roaring, the sound of the storm drowning in the rolling crash of guns. He could hear the voice of Manetius, of Arrigo, and the rest, each one calling out words which shattered as the hull rang and rang like a struck anvil. They had found the Iron Warriors. The Auspex showed the heat plumes of multiple machines. Heavy caliber rounds began to strike the front of War Anvil. The main gun fired and the breech slammed back. The smoking casing rang as it fell into the space beneath. A second later, the Demolisher fired. Cord was half aware of a red target mark vanishing from the Auspex. A kill, he thought, but his eyes were pulling back to the sight block. The world outside was a swirl of dust and storm wind, split by lightning and gunfire. He could see something, though. Something blunt and vast, covered by cables, its bulk stabilized by piston feet. He recognized it. A macro drill, its back tilted up. He could see the wind sweeping the top off heaped earth. A thrill of elation snapped through him. This was it. This was the answer. The Iron Warriors were not looking for something on the surface, but beneath the earth of Talon. He watched, tracking the silent drill machine, even as Manetius's predator cut across his sight, firing on the move, stabbing at machines which were blurs behind the storm curtain. They were receiving fire, but he could tell they were winning. How could they not? He had been right. He had. The beam snapped out from the storm and skimmed the top of War Anvil's right track. Cord felt the heat of the beam's touch through the hull. The other track kept turning. The machine slewed around. The bottom edge of its running track hit a pile of debris and pitched it over. For a long, terrible second, Cord felt War Anvil's weight shift like a ship riding a wave. Then the tank tipped onto its side, rocked, and went still. Cord's head hit the sight mount in front of him, and the world went grey. The engine drive kept turning the left tracks. He could feel blood on the inside of his suit's hood. He could still hear the roar and boom of battle outside. Something moved close to him, and he twisted to see Arrigo holding the side of his head. There was blood on the inside of his left eyepiece, just under where his hand was pressed. The replacement gunner twisted around as Cord moved, and his hand snapped out, gripping Cord's own hand. There was still strength in the grasp, a lot of strength. Cord instinctively pulled his hand back, but Arrigo held on. "Call for help!" he said, his voice a rasp over the internal vox. "Call them! Call anyone and they will know! They will come for us!" The engine drive finally cut out, and now there was just the muffled clamour of battle beyond the hull. Cord shook his hand free of Arrigo's grasp, and the gunner curled back, still holding his head. Cord found the key for the squadron-wide vox.
"Manetius!" he called.
"Two targets still active, Colonel."
"We are—"
"Your situation is evident, Colonel. It will be addressed after the engagement."
Manetius's voice was ice cold and unmovable.
Cord's head was whirling with pain, numbness, and delayed panic. "Call, and they will hear," said Arrigo again, his hand still pressed to the bloody side of his head.
His voice seemed distant, almost slurred.
"They will come. My brothers are dead. I am the last, but they will come. We have found it. Tell them they will come."
Cord looked at the gunner. There was something odd in the man's voice, a simultaneous note of desperation and certainty. He sounded like he was not really talking to Cord. He thought of the blood smeared on the inside of the man's eyepieces, where his head had smashed into the main gun mount. Damage, concussion, delirium. But in one thing he was right. Cord twisted and strained until his fingers found the main vox controls and switched it to broad transmit with maximum power on every loyalist frequency. The storm wind was rising, rattling dust on War Anvil's belly, the sound rising to blend with the noises of battle. He hesitated, adrenaline making his hands shake. Was there any point? Would his words reach through the storm? Would anyone come if they heard?
"To anyone that can hear, this is Colonel Cord of the Talon 71st. We are damaged, unable to move. Current location, grid 093780, in the Hacadia Flats. Please respond.
Master, spoke Harend, but did not move.
His sight was popping with static, runes and data fizzing into and out of existence.
You have succeeded, my son. You have succeeded where all others have failed. You have walked the paths which others have walked, but for you, they have led you here.
What is this?
This is destiny. This is a chance that will never come again. Not for you, not for your brothers or your father.
You are not my master. You are not Perturabo.
Harend raised his remaining arm, fingers snapping wide, Meltagun, cold and dead in his grasp. The creature, which was not Perturabo, but which wore his face, smiled.
No, I am not. We are your shadow, Iron Warrior. But that is not why we are here.
This discussion is over,
growled Harend. He activated his Voxlink, formed a transmission to Yarvak on the surface. The signal did not even start. The creature shook its head slowly. Pain burrowed through Harend, as one by one each of his neural connections began to burn. The pistons on his legs began to bleed pressure, cogwork and servos unwinding. He slid to the floor like a great metal puppet with its strings cut. Light continued to stream from his carapace-mounted lights, sheeting upwards, catching the angles of his fallen shape and casting them against the roof and walls. The figure of Perturabo cast no shadow, but bled into the gloom at its edges. It looked down on him and cocked its head to one side as though observing phenomena it had not encountered before.
We are here to offer you a choice, Ironclad.
Harend could feel the metallic bulk of the dreadnought frame all around him. He could not move. Even the ghost sensations of his severed arm were gone.
What are you?
His voice scratched from his speaker grill.
You know what we are, said Perturabo's voice. We have met many times. We were there in the birth of your legion and your brother legions. We were there as you bloodied the stars. When you felt your first surge of martial pride, we felt it with you. When you bled, we were in the blood that stained the ground. When you felt the wounds to your honor and dreamed of iron, we were both the wound and the dream.
The figure's shape blurred, its substance and shape becoming dust and smoke. Other faces rose from the cloud, a face of cold, hard lines beneath the shock of white hair, a face smiling in sympathy and mockery, a face which radiated control from its feral lines. On they went, sliding from one onto another, until they were a blur, until they were one. And through the carousel of shape and shadow, he saw new faces rise, faces of hounds cast of fire and brass, faces of pale flesh with razor-cut smiles, faces lost beneath clumps of tumours and veils of boils, faces that held other faces within them. He felt the heat of the fires of Istvan V again. He could feel fingers he no longer had burning to black twigs, and eyes boil again in the empty sockets of his skull. A sudden burst of red and orange light spiraled down the tunnel walls. The creature moved aside, so that Harend could see the disk of light that was the tunnel's mouth. The angry glow grew and stuttered, and he heard the roar of gunfire, the scream of energy splitting armour. His vox activated. Noise screamed into his mind. He recognized the voices. Yarvak, Oren, the crews of his Carder, the crews who had been strong enough to reach here. They were dying.
This is not an end, said the creature. This is a crossroads.
We will destroy you.
The creature wore Perturabo's face again to smile.
You cannot destroy what will be, said the creature. You can only choose.
The shadows began to crawl away as furnace lights swirled through the dark. Harend's metal body began to glow with heat. Fire was pouring inside his iron coffin. He was burning away. The fluid around him boiled, his flesh sloughed from his bones. Black blisters formed across his sight as the last moisture in his corpse became smoke. He could still see, but the world was not as it had been.
"See, Ironclad," purred the creature. "See what you can be."
Then he realized that he was standing, that his own limbs were unfolding beneath him. He was a glowing, molten god, his skin the cracked black skin of cooling lava. He felt his thoughts cut free of all concerns. He was a line running through time, a summation. He had been there when the first fortress fell. He had lived as the shell fell through from a clear sky onto a town that would cease to be. He had broken the skin of worlds and roared his existence in the voice of the firestorm. There was only one beat and measure to this life, and that was the heartbeat of the firing gun and the noise of bones breaking under the fall of hammers. He was not flesh. He was not blood or fragile bone. He was obliteration, and he stood beneath the fire shroud of worlds. The vision dissolved, but still he stood. His armor was fading to red and black heat. He could feel it. He could feel it as though it were the heat of his own burning blood. He looked down. His arms were there, glistening, wet, like blood and muscle. Shackled power and heat coiled in his hands. He let out a breath. Smoke and steam hissed into the air. He raised his head with a rattle of cogs and crack of bones.
"Your legion will be as you," said the creature. "They can live. You can live. You can all be more than you dreamed. This is the truth of iron. Iron within and without. Iron in the veins. Iron screaming to the sky. It is the truth you have reached for all your life. Through pain and death and the drum of guns you have walked here. You can be more than this. You can rise from it."
He could see it. He could feel it. A legion of iron and death, burning the stars, cowed by none and broken by nothing. It was what they were always supposed to be, what they should have been. Decimation, dishonor, and betrayal would mean nothing.
"Call to your legion, Solas."
The voice sounded like a song hissed through a skull's teeth.
"Call to your Perturabo. Call to your brothers. Bring them here. Bring them to the gate of the gods."
He felt his thoughts reach for the vox, and he knew that all he needed to do was to speak, and his call would reach through the storm above and bring his father to the weapon he had murdered a world for. And then he remembered the light of the ghost world beneath a black sun, and the shrieks of the Emperor's children. The true face of his father, shrunken but still strong, looked at him out of the core of his being.
"No,"
said Herend, his voice shaking as it fought to rise above the echoes of battle spilling down the shaft from above. He could feel the heat of his body pulling at his thoughts, could hear the thud of shells coughed into flight, and hear the scream of melting metal. The song of destruction called to him. It was him. It was the voice of his shadow.
"No,"
his voice growled out, rising in power with every word forced out.
"You will not take our strength. You will not make us slaves to darkness."
The creature laughed, and the laugh became the shaking ground and the roar of explosions. Herend felt the furnace heat drain from his remade body. He tried to take a step towards the creature. The force sent cracks racing across his body. The fire at the core of him was dimming. The creature shook its head and stepped back towards the exposed patch of black stone.
"To refuse is still a choice. This end already stalks your legion. You have already given yourselves.
This is the gateway to the gods.
The place of change, the door between past and present. The Eye of Terror is not amongst distant stars, son of iron.
It is within you. It is here. The choice is not if,
Ironclad, it is when."
The light of an explosion blinked down the passage. The creature was gone.
A face of empty eyes and razor teeth stared at Haren from the black wall of stone. It smiled in the stuttered blink of explosion light.
So, my son, do you still wish to be iron?
Iron!
He hissed in a voice of dying static. He reached into the furnace within him, into the stinking core of obliteration, and pulled.
Iron comes from within.
The atoms of his being scattered outwards in a blinding white shock of heat. The earth flashed a vapour in a sphere around where he had stood. Burning gas raced up the mouth of the tunnel and blew from the surface in a single brilliant spike of fury. The shockwave spilled outwards. The wreckage and still-burning remains of vehicles shook where they lay, and then began to tilt downwards as a gulf opened beneath them. Dust and debris poured down into the expanding crater. The machines tumbled downwards, drowning in the earth spilling after them. And then silence fell. The dust plume hung in the air, the storm already pulling apart its substance. Beneath it, the wind was already dragging fresh dust over the shallow crater, a vast hand wiping it away as though it had never existed. On the edge of the desolation, the hull of a tank lay on its side, like a fallen grave marker.
You have drawn blood amongst my warrior's emissary.
Perturabo's voice rose over the roar of engines as Argonis jumped down from the sickle blade's cockpit. The hangar bay was a mass of stilled activity. Rocket engines were keening, war machines hung in the cradles beneath landers, all ready to fall on Talon. Perturabo stood before the brushed steel bulk of a huge tank, ringed by his iron circle automata. His augmented bulk swelled and contracted as though in time with great slow breaths. A slit-fronted helm covered his face, and he stared at Argonis with eyes of cold blue light.
"You have concealed the truth from your war master," said Argonis, forcing strength into his voice.
Behind him, he heard Sota Nul and Prophesius come to stand behind him. The Lord of Iron's gaze did not shift. He was still, but Argonis could feel pressure in that stillness, like a storm surge held back behind a dam.
"I have done what I needed to," said Perturabo, "as I have always done."
Argonis shook his head.
"It no longer matters. It is over, Lord. You will withdraw from this place."
"You do not know what you say."
"I do."
Argonis glanced at the waiting craft and thought of the battle in the void he had seen around Talon and of the glittering carpet of explosions on its surface.
"This is not a battle fought for strategic gain. It is a battle for..."
"For a weapon against betrayal."
"A weapon hidden from those you serve?"
"We serve no one,"
snarled Perturabo, and the words sent ice through Argonis.
"The War Master."
"He was my brother before he was War Master."
Perturabo shook his head.
"I do this for him, for all of us."
Argonis shook his head.
"You will withdraw. This battle is over." "We cannot do that."
Argonis turned to see Foryx step from behind a thunderhawk. The first captain aimed a Volkite charger at Argonis. With him stood a line of dull armored terminators, all of their weapons pointed at him, and Argonis could feel the death promised by the black circle of each barrel.
"We must finish this,"
said Foryx.
"It is over,"
Argonis shouted.
"That order is not yours to give,"
said Foryx. Argonis looked back to Perturabo.
"You claim loyalty. You will not speak to me of loyalty. I have given loyalty many times over. Loyalty counted in lives and blood."
"I speak as the War Master."
Argonis did not even see Perturabo move, but suddenly the Primarch was looming above him. The deck rang with the echo of his steps.
"You are not my brother," growled Perturabo. "Your voice is not his."
"No,"
said Argonis, fighting the instinct to turn away, to flee.
"No, it is not. But I bear the War Master's voice with me."
He stepped back,
his hand pulling a crooked key from where it hung around his neck. Prophesius stepped forward, as though called. Time seemed to have become syrup. The sounds of the chamber around muted. Colours dimmed and faded to grey. Argonis felt his skin prickle as he reached out to fit the key into the back of Prophesius's mask.
"What is it?" he had asked Malachurst.
"A creation of the Davinite priests. It was once an astropath. Now they call it a metatron. A conduit for voices. A caster of shadows from one place to another, no matter how distant. It is named Prophesius."
"Why is it masked?"
Malachurst had smiled before answering.
The key slotted into the mask. Argonis felt his arm jerk as though he had just touched a power cable. He could taste cinnamon and ozone. He turned the key. For an instant, nothing happened. Then there was a click. Then another and another and another, rattling together like a chorus of unwinding springs and turning cogs. The back of the mask split apart. Prophesius's hands were shaking, fingers gripping the air. The wax tablet dropped from its grasp, melting as it fell. Shrill cries filled Argonis's ears as he stepped back. Forex flinched, his aim dropping. Every living creature on the deck reeled, all except Perturabo. The mask fell from Prophesius's head. Beneath, there was a lump of pale flesh and a wide, toothless mouth. For a second, the unmasked Prophesius just stood, its mouth flapping bonelessly. Then the mouth opened wide, and opened, and opened. A single, silent word came from within. Argonis felt it ring in the back of his skull and vibrate in his bones. Glowing ashes and snow were falling in the air, and the word went on and on until it reached somewhere that was not here, but was just a shadow away. Smoke and ash vomited from Prophesius's mouth. The black cloud billowed, clotted, hardened, became something harder than smoke, yet thinner than light. An armored figure stood before them. The pelt and head of a huge wolf covered his shoulders. His clawed hand rested on the head of the mace that lay at his foot. Argonis bent his knees without being aware of the command passing from his thoughts. Above him, the shadow of Horus looked down at the Lord of Iron.
"Perturabo," said Horus, and his voice was the hunger of flames and the crack of breaking ice. Perturabo did not move. "Brother," he said, his voice steady. "No," said Horus,
and his shadow form seemed to grow, light draining into the holes that were his eyes.
"No, not brother. I am your war master, Perturabo, and I have watched from beside my emissary. I have seen what you have hidden from me." "Horus," began Perturabo,
but Horus's voice cracked out like a lash of thunder.
"You have deceived me! You have sought power and kept it hidden from me! You have spent my forces for your own ends!"
The thundercloud presence of Horus grew larger, looming high so that it looked down like the cloud of an explosion above a dead city. Argonis felt pressure building in his skull. Beneath Horus's eyes, Perturabo remained, a vast figure made small yet still unbowed.
"Everything I have done has been for the Imperium we will build. Brother, you cannot be blind to serpents within us. I have seen the true face of our allies. I have felt the knife of their treachery. We must hold our own blade above their necks, or we will be unmade. It is almost in my grasp."
He seemed to shiver.
"Please, brother, listen to me now. Trust me now."
The silence grew in the growing crackle of the storm charge. Then Horus's shadow shook its head.
"You have strayed, Perturabo."
He raised his hand.
"And now, you will hear my will."
The shadow of Horus seemed to shrink, to become harder. Argonis could barely keep his eyes open. He could feel the spit boiling on his tongue. He saw the shadow of talons reach towards Perturabo.
Kneel, said Horus.
Io fell to the waiting dark. Air rushed past her, pulling strings of blood from her body. She was dying. There was no escaping that fact. It was not even a projection. It was a fact. Too much physical damage to live, and that was ignoring what the fall promised at its end. Her mind had responded by working faster, like a candle burning bright and clear before it went out. And in the stopped clock world of her fall, she heard the last strands of her creation resolve. She heard the order to begin a tactical withdrawal roll through Perturabo's forces. She heard the Alpha Legion signal channels buzz with confusion. She heard the click of her last handful of seconds fall into the past. It had been a long journey, a long way from the beginning of the mission to this end. All the projections had ended. All the variables had resolved. All apart from one. One final strand of unfixed possibility. She cut away the sound of all the signals and the influx of data until a single vox signal remained. The voice it carried rattled with static, but it was clear.
To anyone that can hear, this is Colonel Cord of the Talon 71st. We are damaged, unable to move. Current location, grid 093780 in the Hakadia Flats. Please respond.
No response came. Several communication arrays on both sides had caught it, but she alone heard Cord's voice. Filters and cutouts meant that it would only reach the ears of others if she allowed it. It had been the most tenuous part of the kill projection, using Cord's obsession, feeding it, positioning him to ensure that Haren's force never returned. It had worked, though, and now they were a last unresolved factor.
To anyone that can hear, this is Colonel Cord of the Talon 71st. Please respond.
If no one else heard the signal, then War Anvil would become just another machine lost to Talon.
If you can hear, please respond.
They would survive for a while, but with Perturabo's forces withdrawing, no one would go looking for them, and the Loyalists would never hear their cries for help. No one would find what they had found.
Please respond.
They would end in silence when their air ran out.
Please.
A dust storm would come and cover them over, and their machine would become their tomb.
Respond!
She cut the signal. 2 seconds later, her fall ended. Her last thoughts echoed in the now empty space of her mind.
Termination complete. No errors.